Hey guys, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
Yeah, you are. That's the show. If you were thinking you're listening to something else, then you're not.
You're wrong.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You're here with us, Candace and Elena.
That's right.
And we're going to take you on a wild ride.
Oh.
First, though, I just wanted to start by saying, you know, now we're officially in fall. So it's thankful season.
Okay.
You know, everybody likes to post on social media every day of November. I mean, we're not in November yet, but, you know, they're like, I'm thankful for whatever. So, Candace, tell me something that you're thankful for and go.
I am thankful for the milkshake that is in my freezer that I will be partaking in after this recording.
I like that.
You knew it was going to be food related.
What flavor is it?
Sorry, guys. I still have a, a terrible wheeze. It is cookies and cream from Chiffalon. If you've never been there, Chiffalon. I'm thankful for moving to Texas. And being near family and having my girls be with their family. I'm really excited about that.
Oh.
Yeah. What are you thankful for?
I'm really thankful for that.
Other than that.
Well, yeah. I would say my Mary Kay facial cleanser.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Because, okay, I'm almost 40 and... if I don't use my Mary Kay facial cleanser, I will break out and it makes me so mad. I left my cleanser in my suitcase and put it up at the top of my closet and I just am too lazy to get it back down and my face is breaking out.
Oh my gosh.
Really stupid.
That is stupid. But you know what? There's nothing like being in love with like your face routine. It just makes you feel like a lady, doesn't it? To wash your face.
It really does. I'm like all grown up and, you know, acting like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
I feel Yeah. Like. So I think we should do this every episode through the fall.
Let's do
you
it.
Know, thankful season. Okay.
Okay.
So.
Can it be one food related one? Thankfulness and then one like real thankfulness?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like that. If we're going to do food, I'll just say I'm thankful for tacos because we did have that for dinner tonight. And it was really yummy.
Yum. I'm also thankful for tacos. Okay.
Okay. All right. Enough about
the good stuff. Let's get into the terrible stuff.
I know. We probably should have waited for the good stuff till the end.
We should have done the thankful after. Maybe next episode.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So today I have two cases for you.
Double feech.
Yeah. They're both a little, not a lot of information, but very important to tell you. So buckle up and hold on to your pants.
That's my buckle. And I'm holding on to my pants. Well, I'm not wearing pants, but I'm holding on to my nightgown.
Your nightgown.
That's a lovely That's very visual cute, by the way. For everyone.
Oh. In case you want, what are you wearing?
I know. I'm wearing a nightgown. And it's not sexy, I'll just tell you that. It's like a big fat t-shirt.
Those are the best, though.
So cozy.
Okay, so I'll start with Winston Arthur Maxey III.
Wow, that's
Have you heard of
a
him?
Mouthful. I have not.
It is.
But Winston's a cool name.
Yeah, he went by Little Wint.
Aww.
Because, you know, he was the third. Yeah. And so.
Oh, that's so cute.
Little Wint. He was born on October 4th of 1954 in Rupert, Idaho. Oh. His parents were Winston Arthur Maxey Jr. and Laureen Maxey. Winston had an older sister and six younger siblings.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, Nelly.
Winston, he was a cutie.
Aww.
There's like just one or two pictures that are floating around the internet of him, and he's just so cute. Aww. And I'll be posting that one on our social media.
I've gotta look it up while you're talking. Oh. Okay. Sign me up.
That's what I'm saying.
I would sip a milkshake with him.
Absolutely. I agree with you. Yeah, so friends say he was shy and polite, and he had a big heart. But he was also known to be a little hard-headed. One summer, Winston asked his parents for a skateboard. Well, they didn't have the money, so he got resourceful. He found some scrap plywood and built himself a skateboard. His sister Marla said he wanted to dance to his own tune, and he was a good brother for the most part, she said. Marla also said that Wint didn't really get along with their parents. She remembers them fighting quite a bit, and he had run away from home before. Their parents made him come back home, but eventually he was gone again. When Winston was 15, he began dating. In the fall of 1970, his girlfriend became pregnant.
Aye, aye, aye.
Yeah. A few months along, she was sent to a home for unwed mothers in Boise, Idaho. And her family decided it was best to put the baby up for adoption. So in the spring of 1971, we're just moving right along. Mm-hmm. Wint had an argument with his mother, and he was asked to leave the family home this time. He was 16 at this time and had nowhere to go. Yeah. For a few days, he hung out and slept at a local campground. His cousin heard that Little Wint was homeless and offered him a place to stay. Yeah. In April of 1971, Winston's girlfriend returned to Rupert for a visit. At this time, she was about 7 months pregnant. Winston tried to talk to her, but she refused to speak to him because she knew that he would want to keep the baby. Sounds like he was grasping at some hope of a future with a family of his own, even at such a young age. But some reports do say that Winston's girlfriend never told him about the pregnancy. So I don't know if he knew or not. Vicky, Winston's older sister, asked him to come visit her in Boise, Idaho. She had moved to Boise, and Vicky says Winston was only there in Boise with her for a few days. When he got there, a friend told him that the logging and fishing industries were booming.
All right.
On the Oregon coast.
Just
a few states over. And Wint told Vicky that he was going to Coos Bay, Oregon to see about getting a job. Coos Bay, Oregon was about 716 miles from the family home in Rupert, Idaho, which was about 555 miles from his sister's home in Boise. So he had to travel. Right. It was a long way. Mm-hmm. So he says he's going to Coos Bay, and this was the last time anyone saw him.
Oh my gosh.
There was no more contact with the family. Did he go start a new life and cut off all ties with his family? It was uncertain how he even left his sister's house. Did he hitchhike? Did a friend take him to Oregon? The family figured he would come home or call or get in contact if he really wanted. You know, he was asked to leave, so it's, I mean, the family never even reported him missing.
Oh my gosh.
On a Sunday in July of 1971 in Coos Bay, a few young men were moving horses from one property to another. As they approached the Sneddon Creek, they saw a very decomposed body of a young male in the creek. He was laying face up. He was wearing a long-sleeve turtleneck sweater. His pants were found a short distance from him. The blue jeans were described as having a leather strap laced down the side of his pant leg.
Okay.
Like leather lace.
Right.
Leather laced up. I don't know. I didn't see a picture of it. I'm just picturing a string of leather being laced up the pant leg.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
So no ID was found with the body, and the official cause of death could not be determined because the body was so decomposed.
Oh, God.
The medical report says that the body could have laid there anywhere from 5 weeks to 5 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy schmoly.
Yeah, because if you think about it, I mean...
Wait, what? What month was this?
It was in July of 1971.
Oh, the summer.
Yeah. The summer. So if it's been there for 5 months, he went through a, you know, this is the northern United States, and it's cold. Yes. It snows up there.
And I bet spring is still really cold there. So
yeah, I'm sure.
Oh.
And the body's laying in water, you know. How does this water affect the body? So the way the body was laying looked like a frog. And so they called this case. Yeah, I don't know. This was a little body. Like they measured it at 5'4 or 5'5.
Wow.
So they called this case the frog boy case.
Oh my gosh. That's so sad.
I know. So detectives canvassed the area looking for clues. They talked to neighbors but were unsuccessful. Coos County paid for a plot to bury the young man, and his case went cold. The police tried many times over the years to match the remains with known missing persons around the area, but were unsuccessful. For 50 years, the young man known as Frog Boy remained unidentified. 50 years. In 2017, the Coos County Sheriff's Office exhumed the young man's remains.
Wow.
They were able to get funding to exhume a few John Does, Jane Does to figure out who they were. So Frog Boy was one of them. They wanted to obtain DNA samples and load it up into, I guess, CODIS to see if he had any match. So a few years later, it took quite a long time. In May of 2021, Dr. Vance, Oregon State medical examiner, sent a piece of his bone to Parabon Nano Labs. Wow. Yeah, DNA was extracted and a SNP profile was created for this frog boy. This profile showed information about his ancestry, his eye, skin, and hair color, and as well as his face morphology. Parabon was able to create an image of what the young man may have looked like.
That's so cool. I love Parabon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really neat the way they can. I mean, if you've seen matches to what they create of what this person might look like to actually finding who the person is and matching their pictures, it's crazy.
They're amazing. I think they're in Texas. They have a lab in Texas, I think.
Really?
Because I was thinking, I am going to go work there.
Do it.
How cool would that be?
Yeah.
Where is Parabon? I was just Googling it. Oh, Virginia. Wait a minute. Never mind.
You don't think they'd have, like, satellite offices?
I don't know why I thought it was in Texas. Maybe that was a dream of mine.
Maybe they were working a case in Texas and...
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Okay.
Anywho, back to your story.
In August of 2021, investigative genetic genealogist, one of those words, C.C. Moore began reviewing the case.
She's so cool.
Yeah. She built several family trees on Winston's profile, which led her to a woman named Lori Merriman. Well, who in the world is Lori Merriman?
Who is that? His daughter?
Lori is the daughter that Wint's girlfriend put up for adoption.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is Wint's daughter. So through finding Lori, Frog Boy was finally able to have his name back. Frog Boy is Winston Arthur Maxey III. Little Wint had a short life, but it seems he tried to make the most of it, and he left a legacy. Aww. So on Dateline, Lori says, even as a little girl, she always knew that she had other parents somewhere that weren't able to take care of her and wanted her to have a better home. She had been adopted in June of 1971, which was when Little Wint's body was found.
Wow.
When she was just 2 weeks old is when she was adopted by a loving family that had always been open about the fact that she was adopted. She loved her adoptive family, but she wanted to find the pieces of her that she didn't know. She wanted to know where she got her red hair and fair skin.
Oh, bless her.
Little Wint had auburn hair. She said, I always stood out and I didn't know where that came from, why I had the likes or dislikes, or why I walked the way I did, or why I talked, or the way I talked was even different. It's interesting to me that she mentions the way that she walks, because when my husband didn't meet his biological father till he was 23, and when we went to meet him, I watched their mannerisms, the way they did things, how competitive they were, but they walked the exact same way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, genetics are crazy.
Yeah. It's very neat to see the genetics.
Wow.
So anyway, back to Lori. She said she knew at a young age that she wanted to find her biological family, and her adoptive family was very supportive of that and encouraged her to find them. And she was just 12 years old when she really started researching.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so mature.
Right? And even for an adoptive family to say, yeah, go for it, you know, at 12 years old, like, anyway.
I'd be like, no, I'm your mom.
Yeah.
Because I'm, you know, possessive. No, I'm just kidding. I wouldn't. But that's amazing that they were supportive.
Yeah. So by the time she was 15, in all her research, she narrowed her search down to about 150 miles radius of Boise. She was actually born and raised in Boise. She had adoption paperwork that showed the age of her birth mom and described what she looked like. And in 1987, Lori's adoptive father, he died in a plane crash.
Oh my gosh.
I know. So sad. Ugh. It's like one thing after another. But this gave her the urge to really dig deeper and look for her biological father. She hired a private investigator. Mind you, she hired with the money that she raised for her senior trip. Instead of going on her senior trip, she paid for this private investigator.
Whoa.
Yeah. So within 24 hours, this PI had some answers for her. He found her biological mother. So she went to go meet her. She told Lori that she was only 15 years old when she got pregnant with her and was sent to Booth Maternity Home in Boise. which provided care for young unwed mothers. And Lori's mother gave birth to her and then was sent home just right after.
Oh. Aww.
Yeah. So she also told her that she wanted to keep her, but it just wasn't in the cards at the time. Her mother told her that the name of her biological father was Winston Went Arthur Maxie III. So Lori connected with some of little Went's family members. She said that over the years, his family told her different stories about what happened to her father. That he ran away. He joined the circus. He joined the rodeo.
I'm sorry?
Yeah. And they told
her, the circus?
They told her that he was in the witness protection program. She was also told that he went off to the army and never came back. Here's this one. He was a drug informant and was kidnapped.
Okay.
So
16-year-old.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Because he's just this unruly kid that just got himself into trouble, is what basically they were telling her. I'm not sure if these were all just guesses to make them cope with his disappearance, or if they were just really, it seemed like they were really just encouraging her not to look for him.
That's rude.
So Went's sister, Marla, said that she had actually herself looked for Went through the years. She was around 12 when he left, and there were rumors about her brother that he had got himself in trouble before he left, but she wasn't sure what was true or not. She even tried to get information from the Social Security office with no success. They couldn't give her his Social Security number.
Right.
But they did tell her that if she would write a letter, that they would send it to him at the address that was on file for him. Not sure what address would be on file at 16 years old. Yeah. I think it did say that his family...
The campground?
I don't know.
The circus?
Wherever that is. Yeah, but it was said in other reports that the family had moved around. So I don't know what address was on file. But anyway, they said, if you write this letter, give it to us, we'll send it to this address. Well, she did. She wrote this letter, took it to the Social Security office, and she never did get a letter in return. They didn't really know what happened to him till 2021 when Coos County did the DNA and genetic testing. Winston's death, Winston's cause of death is still undetermined, but the Coos County Sheriff's Office considers the case open and active. His daughter, Lori, believes that her father met with foul play.
Yeah.
So Lori is still actively working to figure out what happened to him. She created and maintains the Facebook page called Who in the World Murdered Winston Maxie? She has also established the Winston Arthur Maxie III Foundation in memory of her, of the dad that she never knew. The foundation's mission is to educate and support families with missing loved ones.
Aww.
So there has to be someone out there that knows something or had an encounter with Winston in 1970. So any clue could help. If you have any information regarding Winston's case, please contact the Coos County Sheriff's Office at 541-396-7800.
Wow. I can't believe his family never heard about the Frog Boy. I mean, I know that news didn't travel in the same way back then that it does now.
Right.
Where we hear everything that's going on.
Yeah, because, I mean, if to put it back into perspective, Coos Bay was over 700 miles from his family home. So back in 1970,
right.
Where did they get their news?
True. Yeah.
Did they have I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah. I mean,
that's so sad. I just it's so sad that he just got kicked out of his house because he was strong-willed and, you know, he probably wanted some independence that he wasn't getting. And
probably with eight children all in one house.
I know. Yeah. That, I think that has a lot to do with it, too.
I'm sure.
He probably wasn't getting the attention as well that he wanted. And then to be kicked out, and then 16.
I know, that's so young. And then to leave behind a daughter at 16 years old. So, I mean, yeah, I know a lot of people back then had babies young, but to think of it is just, oof. So, we're going to move on to another story. There's a similar story where DNA and genetics testing helped give someone their name back. But there are still questions unanswered, just like Winston's case. So Harold Dean Klaus Jr. was born June 7th of 1959.
You picked people with like 17 names.
I know, but isn't it funny that it's like a junior
and it's so regal too. I love it.
But yeah, there's several similarities in both of these cases. They're different, but very similar in some ways. But yeah, Harold Dean Klaus Jr., he was born June 7th, 1959. He went by Dean or Junior.
Okay.
Tina Lynn Klaus was born September 21st of 1963. The two met each other in 1978, and Tina was 15 years old. Teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Winston. And Dean was 19. They both had lost their fathers at a young age, and so I think they really bonded over that.
Yeah.
Their relationship was described as a whirlwind romance. They were married after a short time of dating at the Volusia County Courthouse in Florida on June 25th of 1979.
Okay.
Their daughter, Holly Marie, was born on January 24th of 1980.
So they're doing this thing.
Yeah.
Like bam, 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 bam. Thank you, ma'am.
Moving right along.
Yep.
Both were described as devoted parents, and they were living with Tina's sister, Sherry, trying to just get on their feet.
Right.
In the summer of 1980, they moved with their one-year-old daughter, Holly Marie, from New Smyrna Beach, Florida, to Lewisville, Texas.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a suburb just out of
Dallas. Why?
Just outside of Dallas. I don't know. I'll tell you.
Sorry, Lewisville.
Actually.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But New Smyrna Beach is, you know, Texas has opportunities as well. So.
And that's what it was. So in the early 1980s, the Dallas-Fort Worth area was rapidly developing, creating a construction boom.
Still is.
It still is.
How is it still?
I don't know how. We're still, how do we still even have land to build on?
I don't even know. I know. But yeah, so they went for opportunity.
Yes.
For probably jobs and
exactly. You're so smart.
I'm just reading your notes.
Oh, you are. I guess you are. I don't know how you can see them, but Dean, he was a craftsman and worked as a cabinet maker. Cool. He went to work for D.R. Horton Home Builders.
Okay. Built a home with them before.
Yeah. As they were getting on their feet, the little family was staying with Dean's cousin to save for their own home. I did see a report that they eventually did get their own home, but I don't know.
Cool.
So just a few short months later, in October of 1980, their families stopped hearing from Dean and Tina.
Oh, no.
Initially, Tina continuously wrote letters to her family, letting them know how they were doing, and it just stopped. But the family just thought that Tina got busy, you know, with a baby and all.
Yeah.
And they didn't really think much of it or suspect anything wrong. To step back a little, just a couple years before Dean and Tina met, Dean was involved with a religious group. Call it a cult, if you will.
Okay.
The people involved in this cult, or this group, claimed that they were, that they had supernatural abilities, and they would even change their last name. If you joined the group, you had to change your last name to Christ.
Oh.
Yeah. So, imagine being Candace Christ.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Okay.
Candace Christ signing out.
I feel so bad, like, making fun of it, because really. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, this has, like, it's giving Scientology
for sure. Me.
Like, I don't know much about this cult, but it's already feeling like that.
Yeah. I mean, so Dean eventually decided that the group was not for him, and he returned home, and that's when he met Tina.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I'm glad he, you know, was like, you know, this just isn't for me. I tried it.
Mm-hmm.
Eh, no thanks.
But I wonder what happened to make him, like, actually say, okay, I'm out.
Yeah, I'm curious.
I have speculations.
Okay.
So, back to 1980. So now the family hasn't heard anything from them since October. A few months later, they get a call from a woman in California named Sister Susan.
What?
I think it was like January of 1981 when they get this call. December 1980, I don't know. Reports are mixed on that. But she tells the family that Dean and Tina have joined a religious group again, and that the two of them are cutting off ties to their family, and they gave up all of their possessions, including Dean's mother's car that they borrowed to move to Texas.
I don't think so.
Well, Sister Susan, she told Donna, Dean's mother, that she would drive her car all the way back to Florida, but she would have to give her $1,000 to do so.
Okay.
So Donna's like, exactly what you said. Okay.
Okay.
She agrees to meet them at the Daytona Speedway racetrack at midnight in the parking lot.
No. It's a no from me, Doc.
I don't know. So Donna was smart. She used her noggin. She contacted the police and told them of this Sister Susan lady, and the police went with her to this meetup.
Oh.
There were two or three other people with Sister Susan that were in the car. They got out and they were wearing white robes.
Ew.
Yeah, just that's
very weird.
Very strange.
That's so creepy.
Yeah, in the middle of the night.
Yeah, at a speedway.
Thank God the police were with her. No telling what would have happened. But they did hold up to their end of the bargain. They drove her car back and handed it over. The police did not have any wrongdoings to be concerned about. There are reports that the group was questioned about how they got the car and where Dean and Tina were, but they were left to go on their merry way. So Donna's thinking Dean had joined a religious group before, so Donna thought he could have again. But there's just something weird about Sister Susan.
Yeah.
Just something was not right. The family on both sides could not believe that Dean and Tina would just cut contact. They tried making a missing persons report, but their efforts went nowhere. Ugh. the police believed the story that they just ran off with this religious group. And the fact that the car was returned corroborated the story for them.
And there's a couple, like, we talked about, you know, the disappearance of Imbo and Patron. And we talk about how it's so much harder to make a couple disappear.
Yeah.
So the police are probably thinking, well, you've got two adults and they've just gone and started a life together. Right. Like, they've got each other, so there's nothing wrong.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they said. Like, their disappearance was voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
January 12th of 1981, remains of a young woman and, or a young man and a young woman were found in a wooded area in Harris County, just north of Houston, Texas. This was off of Wallaceville Road. A dog had come out of the woods towards his owner carrying a human bone in its mouth.
No.
Yeah, police were called and a search went into the woods, or a search team went into the woods to investigate. So there lay two deceased bodies. Also recovered at the scene was a bloodied towel and a pair of gym shorts.
Huh.
The woman had been strangled and the man had been gagged and beaten.
Wow.
It was said that it seemed as if the man died while trying to protect the woman, and the woman likely died first. Their faces were still recognizable enough for reconstruction to be drawn.
And the, how is that? Because the bone, the dog got the bone and...
Yeah, and they, there's even a report that says this man's head was, the skull was already starting to show. But, I mean, I guess they had a pretty good look to go on to draw or reconstruct. So, efforts were made with the public to find out who they were. It was determined that they were deceased for about 2 months before being found.
Wow.
So, therefore, it's believed that their murders occurred between October 1980 and January 1981.
Right.
So, same time frame.
Checks.
Yeah. Same time frame they went missing. And, you know, December, January was when Donna got her car back.
Mm-hmm.
But 2 and 2 was not put together because, number one, the family was in Florida and never knew about the bodies being found in Texas. Number two,
about this again.
Yeah, exactly. Number two, Harris County was far from where Dean and Tina were supposed to be, 250 miles from where they went to live in Louisville. The case went cold and the couple was labeled as Romeo and Juliet.
Oh.
Or also the Harris County Does. It would be 40 years until the family would get answers. So, where's baby Holly? If this couple was Dean and Tina Klaus, where was baby Holly? In 2011, Harris County medical examiners got permission to exhume a dozen Jane and John Does so that they could upload DNA to CODIS, another similarity to Winston's case. But they wanted to try to find some answers. No answers were given for these two Harris County Does at the time. So jumping 10 more years in 2021.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Genetic genealogists were with Identifiers International was able to narrow down the search. After the extensive search, they found distant relatives in Kentucky, but were then led to a closer DNA match. The relative is Debbie Brooks from Florida, who is the sister of Dean Klaus.
Okay.
Debbie says when she got this call after 40 years of wondering where Dean and Tina were, she could not believe it. She actually thought it was a hoax.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. After discussing the findings and the situation, Debbie asked, well, what about the baby? And investigators never knew anything about a missing baby at this point.
Oh, no. I bet their hearts just sank to their butts.
They're like, what baby?
Oh, no.
So a press release was put out about the findings of the identities of the Harris County does. They informed the public that they are now looking for a missing person who would now be around 40 years old.
Wow.
January of 2022, several women came forward thinking that they could be Holly Marie Klaus.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine being like, I think I was abducted when I was little.
Right.
Wow.
So the Hope for Holly project was started. June 7th of 2022, which was actually Dean's 63rd birthday, the real Holly Marie Klaus was located.
Alive?
Alive. Will the real Slim Shady please stand up? Okay. Will the real Holly Marie Klaus please stand up?
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and on his birthday, they found this out. How cool is that?
That was meant to be.
Yeah. It's like he was looking down from heaven saying,
he was. There you go. He guided them to her.
Yeah. So when located, she was 42 years old. She grew up with a different name, of course. She had been married for over 20 years, and she has 5 children and 2 wow. grandchildren. Holly wow. She was able to reunite with her biological family. So the story goes that when she was a baby, she was dropped off at a church in Yuma, Arizona.
Wow.
Around the time that her parents were killed is when this church says she was dropped off. She was dropped off by a group of women who claimed to be part of a religious group. These women wore white robes. They were barefoot and said their religious beliefs included separating male and female members and practicing vegetarian habits and not using or wearing leather goods.
Okay.
Yeah. The church that took Holly in had adopted her to a family, and both the church and the family were unaware of how Holly came into the possession of these women. The family who raised Holly has been cleared, and they're not suspects in the murder or the kidnapping.
Wow.
So the question that remains, who brought Holly to them? Who is Sister Susan? Who is this religious group? How many people have been involved in this group and know something?
That's the thing.
Could it have been that Dean and Tina knew or saw something that they weren't supposed to? And the group killed them to shut them up? So earlier I had said that Dean left the group and then that's when he met Tina. Maybe that's mm-hmm. the time he saw something and was like, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they just caught up to him. Mm-hmm. That's my speculation. But investigators believe that the group traveled around the Southwest U.S., including in Arizona, California, and Texas. But it's been over 40 years, so no telling where all they've traveled or who's joined this group. Anyway, since Holly has been found, the Hope for Holly Project was renamed to Dean and Tina Lynn Klaus Memorial Fund. Shifting the focus to identifying other unidentified deaths. So this has been a joint effort on several parts in this case. The Texas Office of the Attorney General, the Louisville Police Department, the Volusia County Sheriff's Office in Florida, the Arizona Attorney General's Office, the Harris County Sheriff's Office, and the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. So see what happens when we all work together. Mm-hmm. We don't have all the answers, but we do have some key points here.
Did she know she was adopted her whole life? Or did she just think...
I don't know. I didn't find that information.
I can't imagine what a semi-truck that must have felt like.
Right.
Learning that information. I mean, I would assume that her adopted parents would have at some point told her that.
Maybe. I would, I would hope so.
Yeah.
But she was...
I can't imagine being like, yeah, well, you were, like, stolen.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't look up her given name at the adoption because I didn't want to put it out there for everybody to, you know, I want to keep her, sure. her life private at this point. But there are videos of her when she got to reunite with her biological family, and she's just such a sweetheart. She's, she seems like such a sweet lady.
Well, I hope that they're resting in peace, knowing that their daughter was so well cared for, and she has a beautiful life and children of her own, grandchildren, and that she's okay. I'm sure they were like, you know, angels going, that's fine. Like,
fine. Okay, God, she's good.
You know, she's okay. Yeah, exactly.
So the case is still open, and if you have any information on who these people could be or anything that needs to be told about Dean and Tina Klaus, please call the Cold Case Unit at 512-936-0742, or you can email them at coldcaseunit@oag.texas.gov. So yeah, one last thing I'd like to say is I love that these detectives still wanted to know who these bodies belonged to and put a name to them. Yeah. And give their families closure. So let's keep working together. If you know anything about either of these cases, contact authorities.
You know, unlike Lil Wint.
Yeah.
That's like a new rap name. I call that, by the way. Okay. Hi, I'm Lil Wint. But unlike his case, where maybe one person, like maybe tried to rob him or whatever, one person killed him, got away with it.
Right.
I feel like 17 people were involved. At least two, right? Because it's hard to overpower a couple.
A couple, you know? Exactly.
It would be hard to do that. But with the religious cult aspect of it, I say 17 people know what happened.
Oh, for sure. I agree with you on that. But, I mean, with Little Wint, did somebody see this little boy, this 16-year-old kid wearing pants with leather laced up the side of his leg? Was that a common thing back then? I don't know.
Yeah. That is strange.
Yeah. But there you go. There you have it.
Well, what a time to be alive in learning people's identity with the technology we have these days. It's just exciting. Like,
it really is.
It is. And after so long, when you think, and like these people, their family didn't know. Their family didn't know what happened to them. Exactly. Had no idea. But victims' families that do know what happened to their child, but don't know who did it.
Right.
And it's been so many years and we're solving those cases.
Yeah.
It's so exciting.
It really is.
So thank you for telling their stories. I really enjoyed that.
Me too.
And it was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it.
Okay, guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please leave us a 5-star rating so that other true crime fans can find us.
If you have any case suggestions or just want to say hey, email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Instagram, where we post case photos and information at Cousins on Crime Podcast.